what do you know? We're on the radio. The John Curley, Sherry Elicker Show. Starring Sherry Elicker and you. Yes, you. Like, well, I don't want to be on the radio. Well, you can write to us. You can tell us how much you agree, disagree, whatever you want to do. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. Come on in to that State Roofing text line, 1-888-973-5476. And I noticed my computer occasionally goes down. The job of the two of you is to talk about how much you miss me, all my great qualities. And I listened back to the show the other day when my computer went down. Hardly a nice word said about me. Just you were just rolling on like I wasn't even there, right?
Okay.
All right, then. Thank you.
We'll try harder.
Okay. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So we know that Anheuser-Busch is hurting. They've lost about 17% of their sales. They were like number one or number two in beer. Now Coors has picked that up. And I think Modelo is going to be the number one beer because people said, you know what? I don't like your advertising. Didn't like what you're trying to sell. Didn't like the whole thing. So I'll choose this other beer instead of your beer. So they're experiencing the boycott. And Target as well. So Target decides they're going to hire this guy that's a Satanist to design these T-shirts, onesies and stuff like that. And all these trans activists were going to be having this there for Pride Month. And then people said, whoa, I don't like this either. Now, Target is seeing a decline in their stock value. They're also seeing some problems in their store. They've moved a lot of that apparel either out or sort of to the back. And they're back in the news. And I didn't realize, but they had hired a diversity chief who demands that white women, that's you, Sherry, get to work against America's systemic racism. I don't know if you've been doing any of that recently, but I guess this fits in with the whole idea of the boycott Target. Is that this? Is there a cut? There's no cut on this woman. No, there's no sound on her. Did you read through some of her complaints, the woman in charge of diversity there for Target?
Yes. So her name is Kiera Fernandez. She's the chief diversity officer for Target. She says one of the hardest things in the world every day is black. And she talks about what Target is doing. They're spending $2 billion with black-owned brands by 2025. They're increasing their black workers. But here's what she would like to do.
This is what she wants you to do.
Yes. So she said that it was the role of white women to call out transgressions. I think the number one thing I would encourage white women to do is take the DEI learnings and use your voice so the woman of color in the room doesn't always have to. This was during a panel discussion, and then she singled out a white person that was on the panel and said, because whether it's right or not, there are places that you and I will go where your voice will be heard differently than mine. And that's why we're doing this work. That's why it's so important to have this conversation, because we can't ignore the systemic history that got us here and then the things we have to do differently to remove those barriers. So she's saying that, that white women, I guess, would be perceived differently in a way that would be more effective, I guess, if they stood up. And I'm not exactly sure what she's asking people to do. I guess she's saying if you see something that looks like something that's racial or, you know, unequal or something like that, then as a white woman, you have an obligation to stand up because your voice is going to be taken more seriously in certain circumstances.
Ah, okay. Well, listen, if you have that job, like, for instance, the woman that was hired for the equity office in the state of Washington, your job is to be a racist. Your job is to always group people by demographics and then assume a particular behavior based upon skin. That's it. Your job is to judge people by the color of their skin. Not the individual, but group them together and then take demographics. And then you have to say, well, if 13% of the U.S. population is black, we need to have 13% represented in this job. If it's 50% male and 50% female in the U.S. population, we need to have equal amounts of men and women in this job. And if there is any difference, if there is any disparate diversity or any sort of difference between those numbers, 13, if you only have six, well, then the reason you don't have the additional 7% is because of racism. And that's basically how it works. So what you're trying to do is an equal outcome. So, the difference being between equality and equity, right? The difference between equality and equity. So equality is that everyone is treated equally, regardless of the census category. Equity is the idea that everyone will end up in the same place. And then once everybody's in the same place, then we have equity. Well, that doesn't take into consideration that none of us are the same, right? In a family, the firstborn has a higher IQ than the second. And even when it comes to twins, the firstborn, sometimes even twins don't have the same IQ. Everybody has a variety of gifts, of detriments, weaknesses, and strengths. But the idea of equity is to break people into groups, never to judge them as a human being, as solely as an individual, but always through a group. So those people that have those jobs are basically racist, and they are in the act of discriminating. So you say we need to have a certain number of people to reflect the population. Well, why? How about actually choosing the best person? You know, there's an interesting sort of scenario I was reading the other day. A guy goes in, this is 10 years from now, a guy goes into the doctor's office, and the doctor says, well, it's cancer. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Get me the best doctor. I want the best doctor you can possibly get. Well, the brain tumor is located in such a place. I know. I want the best. Well, what do you mean the best? Who's the best doctor? Well, we don't judge them by best. What do you mean? You're asking for the best. I can't tell you who the best is. We have a black doctor. We have a black female. We have a black male. We have an Asian female. We have an Asian male. We have a Hispanic female. We have two Hispanic men. We don't judge by best. We don't use merit. That's not how we do it here. Well, I want the best, whoever the best is. Again, I don't know what you mean by best. I mean, that's an exaggeration of a case, but that is possibly because when you strip away all the other language that's used, merit is the key, right? And you see it in sports, but we don't talk about sports having equity. We talk about sports being purely a meritocratic system, the best. People would not pay any money to see a diverse baseball team or a diverse basketball team. It wouldn't be worth your money because you're not going to see the same sort of athleticism displayed. But in these cases, the people that are involved in this, their job is to discriminate based upon color. Hot take.
Well, this woman.
Excuse me.
Andrew is being spoken to by management, so he's distracted from his hot take duties.
Then I would like you to make the noise, Jacob.
And I'm here now so we can compare and see how close it is.
Wow. He's not just going to save me outright. He's going to wait this out. It sounds a lot like a boosh. That's not bad. I think I did okay.
That was good. That was a 9 out of 10, I think.
That's pretty good. Okay, good. Thank you. All right. So, anything else you want to add, Sherry, or you want to question my hot take?
No, I don't want to question it at all. I just want to add one thing that she happened to mention. This is the woman, of course, that's the chief diversity and inclusion officer for Target. She said, given the calls for racial equity over the past year, we know that many companies are standing up for or deepening their investments in their diversity and inclusion work. DE&I is not meant to rest on one individual's shoulders. The work requires shared accountability and responsibility, which is why it's so critical to create an infrastructure, a system with tools that allow you to integrate DEI into your ecosystem in a way that truly drives your business. So she's all in. She thinks that this should be the backbone of a business.
Mm-hmm. The business of business, as Milton Friedman say, is not business then. So the business, all of these corporations that have decided to dive into this activism, and the same thing with the NBA and NFL, you know, painting Black Lives Matter on the, you know, in the end zones or on the sidelines. And it's like people, you don't need I don't need my beer to take a political point of view. I don't need a bathing suit. I don't need that. I don't need Target. I don't need any of these people that are involved in commerce to become political, to be activists. Just sell me a product that I want. I don't need to be taught anything. I don't need to be enlightened in any way, right? And that's what they're doing, because the people that are there that have those positions to do this marketing, they're all from the extreme elite. I mean, these are the people from the top of the ivory towers that have graduated from Harvard and Yale and University of Pennsylvania and UCLA and Stanford. And they're going to teach the rest of us that we're just a bunch of ignorant slobs and we should think the right way, start to come around and start thinking the right way. And the right way is to understand that, you know, there are multiple genders and that anybody can change their sex if they want. And, you know, everything that they want to push. And they're going to push it through the products. And it's like, here's a beer. Now let me lecture you about the way you're supposed to be thinking. And American people have said, nope, sorry. That's not what I asked for. I just wanted a beer. I just wanted a crappy beer that I can drink while I cut the grass. You know, I need the rest of the stuff.
Bud Light, I think, has lost 30%. Target has lost $10 billion in 10 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Because there's no place for the activism. Put that, have the political person do that or have an activist do that. But once it's into the stores, I can imagine the 10 or 15 people sitting around the board there at Target. And when one person goes, I think we should hire this guy that's a Satanist that does all these kind of crazy t-shirts and stuff. And I think we should put all this trans stuff in and have onesies with, you know, trans exist and all this other stuff. We should sell that. I wonder how many people are sitting there going, I don't know about that. Or the people of Bud Light. Like, really? Really? A guy in a bathtub? A guy that jumps around like a girl? A guy? Is that what we want? But I'm sure they were silenced. And don't say anything because you don't want to be, you know, be called in. You know, it's like the Red Guard, China's Red Guard. These are the young women, the young men that took up arms against intellectuals and professors and teachers and anybody that had any kind of money and beat them with canes and put dunce caps on them and paraded them around and burned their houses down, you know, because they needed to have new thinking. They had to get rid of the old culture. This is the same sort of thing. This is the new culture that we're all supposed to be in lockstep with. And people have simply said, no, not for me. Sorry, I'll pick up a Coors Light. I went to the store on Memorial Day, and there was no Coors Light. There was not any. There was no Corona Light, but there it all was. There were cases and cases and cases of Bud Light. People just said, nope, sorry. Same way they walked away from the NFL and the NBA. They didn't want to be lectured to. I get it. Leave me alone. I don't need it. The meltdown continues for Bud Light. I don't know what they're going to do to possibly get out of it. They're offering cases of beer for $10. They have coupons. The stuff is just sitting on the shelves. I don't know if they'll come back from this. How do they possibly ever turn it around?
I don't think they can.
No.
I really don't. I mean, I think there'll be a point when it dies down, but they were trying much too hard to make up for it, you know, putting out the videos and the all-American thing and appealing to, you know, their old demographic and doing, they did that too quickly. This needs to go away. This needs to settle down and people will eventually go back to Bud Light, whether it be that the price is right or it's just not really on anybody's radar anymore. But that's going to take some time and they're taking a big hit.
Yeah, I don't think they come back from it. Because I don't know how you turn it around, because the problem is that the two beers, or all those beers, are so similar. The Coors Light and the Bud Light, basically the same. It's fairly generic in its taste. It doesn't offer you anything specific that the other one doesn't. It's not like you can't live without it. You just pick up the other one and go get it. Plus, you could also sing along to this song.
Yeah.
It's the boycott Target song, Sherry.
Yeah, it's apparently
top of iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, it was released on May 25th. In the video, the rapper that's doing this holds up all these like kids' clothes that have rainbows on them and a different, you know, every one of these Target products. They actually shot the video in a Target. So they go through the aisles and they pick out different things. According to the article, they're number one on iTunes. They're beating Taylor Swift and Luke Combs, which is kind of amazing. Although he's saying now that they are being shadow banned. So in other words, they're making it more difficult to access the video and all of that. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing because the song's so bad. I mean, even if it has a message, it's just terrible, isn't it? God, so bad.
I'm upset they're beating Luke Combs.
Yeah,
what Luke Combs song are they beating? That's my guy, Luke Combs. Come on now. All right. Thank you very much, Jacob, for doing the hot take. When Andrew is not there for hot takes, that will be your job. All right? And all other sound effects. You'd be like the guy from Police Academy. There we go. You're writing to us. That's good. Thanks to write him to get him, as they used to say at Breezy Point Summer Camp and up in Vermont, Sherry, where I spent two horrible weeks. Got to write him to get him. And then the guy would come in with the letters and then throw them onto your little cots. And everybody else had letters. My parents never wrote any letters and sat there and just acted like, I'm adopted. This is a weird story. By the way, you write is mynorthwest.com. You can also text State Roofing text line 1-888-973-5476. My friends invited me to a dinner and then charged me for groceries. Is that okay? This person writes in. The answer to that is no. Next question. But it is amazing. I don't know if this is a trend or not, if this is something that people, if this is for younger folks to do. But when you invite somebody over for a party, normally what people always say, you invite them over for a party, they'll say, what can I bring? And then you're always, no, nothing, just yourself. Your presence is your present, right? That move. Or a nice bottle of wine would be great, or pick up a six-pack, or if you could, you know, if you could bring the salad. You know, you always sort of, you know, make sure that everybody has a job to do when they come in there. But to go to somebody's party and then does the host ask? Is that how it happened? The host said, by the way, you know, can you, I'm going to need $24 from you.
Well, they gave a couple of examples, which I think is probably rare. One sent a note asking the attendees of this dinner party to send them $25 to reimburse them for the materials. Another, on the way out the door, reminded them that she had a Venmo account and that she would like $40 from each person. I've read a couple of things about this, how, you know, people would come over to somebody's dinner, they'd order takeout, and then would divide up the money or would ask the guests, you know, hey, we just ordered Thai food. It came to $150. You know, your portion is 80 or something like that, which, mm-hmm. again, all of it's terrible. You invite someone to dinner at your house. You're the host. You pay the bill. Unless there's some arrangement in advance that, you know, okay, we're all going to get together and chip in. But if you've invited people, you always pick up the tab. I can't even believe this is a debate.
I keep wondering if it's a cultural thing, if it's a generational thing. So let's go to those people that are younger than us.
Let's like
start
everybody.
Okay, I wasn't going to say that, but
all right. Okay, go ahead.
I'm looking around. Oh, there's Jacob. Jacob, you appear to be 24. Mm-hmm. Have you had a dinner party and invited people and then charged them?
I am either not among the members of my age cohort that are throwing dinner parties, or my age cohort is just not really throwing them yet. But mm-hmm. no, I would say I have not had the experience of being invited to one and being asked to pay. Mm-hmm. I do think that it wouldn't necessarily surprise me. I would be surprised to get one at the end of a dinner party. I can say that I wouldn't be terribly surprised if someone was planning something and they suggested like, hey, just to diffuse the costs of this, would you mind kind of buying in or paying ahead of time, if that makes sense. So, but I think, thank you. I think it would still, even among the weirdness of my generation, be considered rude to ask for it at the end.
Andrew, I'm going to assume you've never had people over, either asked for money directly or in some way tranquilized them to the point when they were unconscious, you went rifled through their wallets and purses.
No, that's not a bad idea. That would be how you want to do it, so they don't know. They don't suspect.
Right.
Until they get
right.
home, and they're like, oh, wait, what happened to the $20 I had?
Yeah, I have no memories right. for half an hour, and also my money's gone. I wonder what happened.
But I haven't had the opportunity, like Jacob, to go to one or to host one or anything. Like, I don't know if I'll ever go to one, honestly, at this rate.
Oh, that's not true. Oh. Wait, how old are you, Andrew?
I'm 25 right now.
You're that's so
you're
much.
Nothing but time.
Yeah,
this
funny.
Stuff doesn't start till you're 35. Don't worry about it.
Don't think I'll ever go to a dinner party.
Right. I mean, I'm also just not that interested in dinner parties. It doesn't sound like it sounds kind of stuffy to me, honestly.
Dinner party. It doesn't have to be. How about just a party? Just a party, right? You're coming to my party, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, fine. So far, the total amount spending on this party I'm having out here, Sherry, is close to $15,000. You think I should ask everybody for some money?
No. No, absolutely not. You can afford it. That ruins the spirit of the party. The party is a celebration. The party is for your birthday and to celebrate you.
No. I don't like that. I don't like that kind of attention. It's not about my party or celebrating me. No. I like attention, but I like the attention I can control. I don't like being the guy that's getting the attention because it's your birthday. Then you stand there, oh, happy birthday. Oh, thanks a lot.
I like that. You feel like you need to deserve it, and birthday attention is unearned. Like, you shouldn't get it just for existing another year.
It's also awkward. Like, I think surprise parties are just mean. I really do. Like, I would never want a surprise party.
Yeah, okay. All right, Jake, write that down, because we had one planned.
Let's have a duel. It'll be a dinner party. It'll be Andrew's first dinner party, and it will also happen to be Sherry's surprise.
Well, Sherry's surprise
let me ask
party.
You this. Yeah. Right, if I come to Seattle and someone takes me out to dinner, that would be a surprise. So that would be a shock, actually. So,
yeah, where
no
a dinner
matter
where
it
you
happened,
actually
get... a drive-through. I'd be like, what? Somebody's taking me out to dinner? Somebody's paying attention to me?
Yeah. I went to a dinner party at a friend's house. She was one of these teachers at Villanova Schultz Theater. Her name is Irene. And she's like, okay, all right, well, I'm going to... Okay, she puts everything in the oven, and we're all, you know, eating hors d'oeuvres and shrimp or whatever, and sitting around having drinks. She goes, I have to go for a while. I'm like, okay. And Irene was kind of erratic, sort of, kind of very always just sort of you always find she, I couldn't quite find the words to describe it. And the hands are always flailing around and stuff. And then I'll say, I have to go. I'm like, all right, we don't know where she leaves. She goes down the hall. She goes into her bedroom and falls asleep. She's throwing the party. And now she's asleep. So after about 20 minutes, someone goes, has anybody seen Irene? Someone walks down the hall. They open the door. Irene? Close the door. Come back out. She's asleep. What? Yeah, she's just laying there on her bed, like flat out on her bed. So we just went in. We turned off the oven, pulled the pot roast out or whatever it was, half cooked, and put that in the refrigerator. And everybody left a little thank you note, and we all went home.
Why didn't you wake her up? Because really? You didn't want to be there in the first place.
No, you didn't. You know, hey, Irene. Hi. Irene, hey, excuse me, can you get up? We're all in here waiting for the party. No, well, I think she pretty much told everybody
terrible.
How she felt about all of us being there by falling asleep.
I guess, but when she woke up, she was probably pretty upset that you guys didn't wake her up.
No, not her. God, was she weird. Oh, my God. You'd be doing an acting scene, two people on stage, and all of a sudden she's like, I don't know, what is it? And she'd pick up like a baby doll, like a doll out of a box, and throw it up between you. And he goes, What is that? Is that your mother? I don't know. Is that your mother? Like right in the middle of the scene. And then you're like, no, that's a naked, broken baby doll. That's not my mother. All right, okay. Sorry. Keep going. Don't let me interrupt.
I don't think I'd want to eat in the back sleeping from her house. I think that would scare me. You know, if she's that weird.
She did Ella's with paper.
Might taste like kitty God litter or something. Gross.
Oh, yeah. A lot of that. A lot of hair. Ugh. As it is sometimes the case with pharmaceutical companies, they produce a drug for one thing, and then all of a sudden it turns out like, hey, that works for other stuff as well. That's the truth of Viagra. They're like, oh, look at that. I think they were building it for something else, producing it for something else. And then they're like, well, yeah, that's got a kind of interesting side effect. So let's sell it for that. Here's another example of it. The drug that's extremely popular right now, it's used primarily, it's prescribed for people that are diabetics. It helps with the part of the blood sugar and balancing blood sugar for diabetics, and it also then has an effect upon the neurotransmitters in the brain to suppress urges to eat carbohydrates or to be snacking between. So the blood sugar goes up or goes down. It triggers a part of the brain that says you should probably start eating. So they produce it for that, and now what they find out is that it has kind of an unexplained or explained, but you know, certainly not researched benefit. Who else is benefiting from it, Sherry?
Well, a lot of the people that have lost weight on this thing also say that they have become less addictive in general. It's sometimes people have an addiction to food and they have addictions to other things, shopping, biting their nails. This reduces the cravings, they say, for some of these things. But it doesn't dull pleasure. So you can still enjoy bites of food, but not go overboard. You can still do certain things, but you don't have that impulsive kind of, you know, when you get a dopamine hit sometimes when you go shopping, when you do a lot of things, when you do a lot of things that can become addictive, hoarding, all these things. And they say that this reduces that. The way it works is it prompts the pancreas to release insulin by mimicking a hormone, which is GLP-1. The primary use seems to be weight loss. A lot of celebrities are using it. The Real Housewives group they're famous for using it. Khloe Kardashian, Chelsea Handler said she took it by mistake. I don't know how you do that. So it's a big thing among celebrities and people that are able to get this. But there's some question about whether or not the there's enough of it, because you don't want to take this away from diabetics, people that actually need the drug to control their diabetes.
I think there's three of them that are primarily on the market now. They're not cheap. If you're not diagnosed as diabetic, you have a hard time getting it. And there was, when they first released it, they were giving out these coupons for $25 or something. I know somebody that got it, and they're still paying $25, but it's not cheap. It's an expensive drug. And again, there's three on the market, but it does suppress the appetite, and people do lose a lot of weight on it. But I've also heard that once you get off it, it's coming right back again.
Right.
So,
but that's every weight loss, anything, right? I mean, most people, if they dramatically lose weight, they're going to gain it right back unless they maintain whatever it is that they're doing to keep the weight
may
off.
May I remind you of Eastside Weight Loss Clinic that's having incredible results with some people losing as much as a pound of fat a day, Sherry.
Well, that's great, and that's how they should do it. But sometimes low carb, whatever, you know, these things don't really maintain. You can't really maintain your weight that way.
You know, I was sort of getting sort of sleepy in the afternoon on a Saturday or something. I have to stay up for something I have to go to, whatever. You know what I do? I get online and I shop. I don't buy anything, but I just look around, just start scanning around, because it does release dopamine just thinking about it. So I just take a little 20-minute nap. There's a little nap here. Nope. It's just start shopping around. And then, you know, I have a tendency to buy stuff between 7 o'clock in the morning and 10:30 in the morning. Yesterday, I bought an 8x12-foot chapel. It's a chapel. It looks just like a little church. And I bought it.
Do you have to put it together?
Yes. And it seats 4 people. Very excited.
Well, that was a 7 a.m. purchase?
8:15, the order went through.
Okay, well, good. Well, that's productive. Right. You're doing a whole wedding thing. Of course you need a chapel.
Yeah, a little chapel. And it's going to be on an island.
Oh, that's good. You're building your whole thing there for people.
Yeah,
that's
whole thing. I'll send you a picture of it.
Okay.
Somebody
good.
Said rice. It looks creepy. It looks like something that would be somewhere in Louisiana where people would be sacrificing snakes or people, or
hey, well,
sacrificing people with snakes.
If the wedding thing doesn't work out, you go to that.
That's right.
You know, sacrificial chapel.
Come on out. $20 an hour. All right. Lots of stories to get to. They finally found out after the big investigation, the woman that they fired that was running the equity office there in the state of Washington, the first employee, you know, that woman had to be doing some pretty bad work in order for Governor Inslee to fire her. Find out more about that.